Brett, thank you so much for speaking to us this morning.
Good morning, Tess. Thanks for having me.
So could you tell us, what is collaboration like at the moment between healthcare services and patients on a broader level?
It really varies from organisation to organisation and also within organisations. There are some good examples of where patients are actually meaningfully involved in decision-making structures, but there are also many examples of where that is severely lacking.
And I imagine that in the instances where it is severely lacking, that's got a lot of impact that ripples through for the people on both ends of the spectrum.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the more that we start to normalise this, then I think other organisations will take it up. I think some organisations have already started to see the benefits of collaboration, and the more that we can make that normal and the more that we can demonstrate the benefits that it has, it will ripple across the sector.
And so what about for the patients and the carers themselves? Has it, I suppose, been difficult to get them to want to contribute, or have they been really, really involved and really keen?
I mean, that varies as well. But the thing that I noticed when I before I began this research that's just been published was that I'd asked people who were working within palliative care specifically if and how they had been partnering with patients and their carers. And a lot of people sort of made assumptions. A lot of people sort of said, you know, they're grieving, they're going through a difficult time, they don't want to be a part of it. But then when I asked about whether they'd actually asked them if they wanted to contribute or collaborate or somehow partner, often the answer was no, they had not even asked. So I think it's that assumption. I think, from some people won't want to work on a collaborative project or whatever it may be, and that's fine. But I think we shouldn't just assume, and healthcare service providers and organisations and systems need to actually ask people if they want to be involved.
Is it as simple as just asking that question, or are there other things that we can do to make sure that the contributions of patients are recognised?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certain things that we can do. So, for example, in our review, one of the findings was that obviously, patients and carers are often very busy people and dealing with a lot of things in their lives. So there were some examples that came out of our study, such as one organisation which had set up online forum by which people could actually participate in high-level committees and decision-making capacities, you know, from the comfort of their own home, for example. Now, I think that is actually still quite rare, and a lot of other organisations still require face-to-face meetings and less flexible kinds of collaboration. So I think it's, as you say, it's not just asking, it's also making sure that organisations are flexible so that we can actually get the benefits of these partnerships in a non-tokenistic way.
And so if I were to give you a magic wand and you were able to, you know, wave it and just see your ideal situation play out, what would the palliative care sector look like?
Well, if you do have a magic wand, please do give me one. What I would love to see is collaboration at the highest levels. So, that would involve executives and boards that comprise of, people who are patients and carers, as well as other non-patient and carer experts, and where that expertise of patients and carers is actually embedded into everything, every decision that's made. So I think that, yeah, it's two things. It's, first of all, just changing the value and making sure that people understand the value, and also embedding that at every level of the sector.
Brett, we really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for chatting to us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Tess.